Welcome to the Cannabis Equipment News Podcast. Hi, I'm David Manti, and welcome to a new episode of the Cannabis Equipment News Podcast. With me this week is Sundy Siepried, CEO of Safe Harbor Financial. And I know what you're thinking. The intro last week was so phenomenal, I decided to do it with every episode. Just a little sneak peek into the episode before we really dive in. But no, that's not the case. We actually ran into the exact same technical difficulties that we did last week. So here I am again, just letting you know that we did salvage the audio, not my video. So you're only going to see Sundy. But really, again, you're just here to see her. I'm just in the background anyways, just a background player. Our producers did everything they could to sweeten the audio. I think everything still sounds great, and Sundy's insight into the industry can't be missed. So before we get started, please make sure to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast. You could also help us out a lot by leaving the podcast a positive review on whatever platform you use. If you want to email the podcast, you can reach me at david@cannabisequipmentnews.com with email the podcast in the subject line. You can also subscribe to us on YouTube at CN Magazine. I'm pretty sure. You can also subscribe to our daily newsletters and make sure you get that delivered to your inbox first. All right. Here's my interview with Sundy Siepried, CEO of Safe Harbor Financial. Kind of started the entire cannabis banking industry, so don't want to miss this one. Sundy, I always like to start with a little bit of background. How is it that you found yourself working in the cannabis industry?
By surprise, let's say that way. You know, I always like to tell people I grew up in a very conservative Baptist home. So, you know, I still look up the sky and say, cannabis, really? You know, it's one of those odd things in life you never expect. But Colorado had legalized in 2014, and yet they couldn't get any banking. So cash was all over the streets. People were telling me stories. I had some friends say, why won't you bank the industry? And I said, oh, the regulators will just shake their head if I go to them and say, no, go away. This is not something you can get into because it's federally, you're federally insured as a credit union. And certainly this is federally illegal. So I said, but I'll go ask for you guys. I was supposed to retire about 5 months from the time they asked me to look at this. So I went to the regulator and I said, okay, how's cannabis banking going? Or at that point in time, it was marijuana banking, right? Everything was marijuana, very early stages. And what do you think of this? And he was prepared for this. He knew I was coming in to talk about this. And he had a handful of papers and he handed it to me. And he's like, please go do it. Wrong answer. I'm supposed to retire in 5 months. You know, don't set me on a new project. I had no idea how long and how difficult it would be. So that's how I got into it. It was a safety factor for the community. And once you learn how much cash is passing hands and how unsafe your home environment is, you can't unlearn that.
What were some of those challenges that you ran into early on?
Well, the very first thing is, getting the team around me comfortable. And I was the CEO. Normally, the CEO doesn't just take the project on, but I wanted to make sure that my board was safe from prosecution, that I was safe from prosecution. And the way I avoided that was I made all the decisions. I did all the onboarding. If they were going to prosecute anybody, I would be the one that they would prosecute, keeping everybody else safe. So you can only imagine the hours I put in trying to keep me safe, to keep them safe. And for the first, 6 months, my first day off that year was Easter Sunday. That's how hard and long I worked to try to keep everyone safe. And I kept talking to the regulators and letting them know what I was doing and learning. That was the most difficult part is who knew anything about cannabis business except the cannabis business owners. And so all of a sudden I was expecting mom and pop shops and I get these large companies coming in with 6 and 7 dispensaries and cultivation licenses. And I mean, they were massive size companies, but we just kind of had to, the good news is when the mom and pop showed up, they were like a piece of cake in comparison to these other large companies. And so learning the industry was the most difficult part because I had to learn the industry to mitigate the risk, to put that money into the financial system.
So you're 5 months away from retirement. How do you pivot into a project that is by and large, monopolizing all of your time?
You know, That's the most interesting thing. And people, why did you do it? You know, why wouldn't the other CEOs do it? That actually put me in the best position. If I crashed and burned, I could still go on to retirement. I didn't have any benefits I was going to lose. You know, everything was going to end in November. So to me, most people or CEOs live by contract. My contract would be up, which meant anything that the board owed me, any type of benefit would end on November. So I didn't have to worry about losing anything by doing this. I even told the board at that point in time, don't give me a new contract. Don't, you know, at this point in time, don't give me a new contract. Let's just see if I can get this off the road and get it going and do it safely. We'll get through one exam and then we'll talk. And so that's how we handled that.
Were you getting a lot of pushback from the board?
No, surprisingly enough, I know. But see, if you go to the credit union concept and charter, credit unions were actually created and chartered to serve the unbanked, to serve the underserved. And so it was a perfect example of what we should be doing for our communities. You know, we were more worried about what our members, our clients, our normal consumers would think about us doing it. But I had more of our members from the credit union say, thank you for doing this. You know, thank you for making Colorado safer. We really did it undercover for a little while. That's when we created Safe Harbor as a division of Partner Colorado Credit Union. Kind of one of my other risk mitigating strategies. If crash and burn, it was Safe Harbor that crashed and burned, not necessarily Partner Colorado. So, you know, that was a good move on our part, but it was also a difficult on the organization. But it was a long process, but it was, I think that the board took great pride about a year after we started, and I would take them on site to the cannabis companies, to the cultivation, to the manufacturers. I would have them meet the owners so that they couldn't stand in front of a regulator and say, we don't know what she's banking. They knew what we were banking. And that is, they took great pride and then in solving a community problem of cash once we got there. You know, they saw the community issue. They knew they were a credit union. And after being credit union CEO for 20 years, they had a lot of trust in me. And that was important. I don't know that somebody, a new CEO coming in could get that, garner that kind of trust, but I had built it year over year over year with them.
What was it like for some of these cannabis businesses in Colorado before you stepped in?
Oh, these are those stories that you just can't unhear. I met with the very first client, and they turned out to be our very first client. And it was July timeframe, and we started in January. So 6 months after, of course, they're saying, will she ever get there right? Will she really do this? And that's really what they said. They'd seen people go in, get out, banks start, banks, you know, fall out. And I said, well, how are you handling your cash now? And this one fella, I mean, they were like early 30s, late 20s. And he said, well, at night, in the middle of the night, my wife and I bundle up our two kids. We put them in the back in their car seats, and it's in the middle of the night. And then we bring the cash and we find three different ATMs and we feed 20s into those ATMs until all of our money gets into the bank. But it has to be three different bank accounts because you have to stay under $10,000. And I looked at him and I'm like, how do you know that? This is called bank secrecy for a reason, right? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, the banker at the bank they were saying is if you put anything over $9,000 in your account in cash any given time, you will end up having your account closed. So now not only were they fighting federal illegality, they were learning to bank in a criminal nature. And as, you know, as a professional banker, I didn't want to encourage that. I wanted to give them transparency. I wanted them to be able to do banking without fear, have confidence that, you know, because you're in the open, because you're going to maintain compliance with us, you shouldn't have to worry about me closing your account unless you do something fraudulent or bad or illicit.
What was that first transaction like when you brought the first client on board?
Oh, it was really the second transaction. The first one started going fine, and I have to tell you, we were all trial and error, and all I promised these clients was that I'm going to get it right, but you're going to have to bear with me as I go through education and go through this with regulators. But the very second week of January, one of the clients brought in like four bank boxes full of 20s.
Okay.
So we're talking nearly $1 million in 20s. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And my staff is like, oh my gosh, this kind of money now puts our staff at risk, right? At the credit union. Mm-hmm. And so we're saying, this isn't good. Taking the security and putting it in the community and making our employees feel insecure. So I said, this isn't going to work. We can't have this kind of cash running through the office. And that's when we went to a courier system. But I will tell you, it was a live and learn experience just like that all the way through. Hard knocks. The first time you get a hit, no fact. The first time this happens, the first time the Federal Reserve says we're going to do an audit on you, we're like, oh no, they're going to know we're doing marijuana money. I'm like, they already know, because yeah. I was so transparent. I was in a meeting with the Federal Reserve president, and I was right front and center and said, we're banking cannabis, which probably led to the audit, right? So
yeah. So what did the Federal Reserve president say in reply?
After the meeting, because I was there with now Governor Polis and Congressman Perlmutter and with other industry participants, and one of the banks was there, just says, we're not going to touch it. We're not going to do it. None of our banks going to do it. And then he walks out of the meeting. And then, of course, I had been working with Congressman Perlmutter, and he said, Sundy, why don't you speak? And I said, this is how we're doing it. And I was, you know, again, very transparent. If you want me out of the business, kick me out of the business fast. But here's the real deal. The money was already getting into the system. It wasn't being accounted for, right? There's no transparency. So they couldn't determine what was illicit money from legal money. And they could see that what we were trying to do is make sure that the money was legal and entering the system safely. And after the meeting, Esther, the president there, she came up to me and shook my hand and said, thank you very much for doing this. You know, nothing, but the Federal Reserve is one of those interesting things, because it's a don't ask, don't tell. All of the Federal Reserves with whom we have accounts and process cannabis funds, they know that we're processing cannabis funds. But we had one financial institution go to the New York Federal Reserve and said, we're going to process cannabis funds. And they told that financial institution, you put one cannabis dollar through this Federal Reserve and we're shutting all of your accounts down. We're not going to let you have any money going into the federal system. So you see, it's always been a don't ask, don't tell. Safe banking may fix that problem so that we can have access without hiding it.
Mm-hmm. It's and I want to get to safe banking, just because, well, I mean, we can jump into it now. What has it been like for you with all the fits and starts with safe banking, where it feels like we're at the finish line and then all of a sudden we're back to square one?
All right. So to be honest, and I did help Senator Crapo at one point in time with language in safe banking. So I've been very active in lobbying and assisting and saying, here's the problem. Here are the problems you're going to run into. But let's face it, I'm in my ninth year of processing cannabis funds, and neither I nor anybody else has been prosecuted. It's the biggest roadblock for financial institutions that you're subject to prosecution for doing this. What they really want to know is that you're putting the effort in to protect the financial system. So, you know, the first couple of times I was up there, I'm helping every year. In fact, this will be the first year I'm not up there lobbying for safe banking. What is it, the eighth or ninth time?
Yeah.
if it gets to the floor for a vote. So to me, it was never up and down, back and forth, because I was going to continue to do the right thing, which is put this money into the financial system in a safe and sound manner so that we could start to see who the legal players are and sort out those illicit players and legitimize the industry. It really works to the benefit of the industry, and it really works to the benefit of the financial system. Everybody wanted the money banked. They just wanted it banked safely.
Why won't you be testifying this year? Are you tired of spinning your wheels?
Well, I never had to testify. I'm not lobbying.
Okay.
Just because, you know, we went public a year ago. And so my time, it gets spent now in investor relations more than anything else. And got a lot of people out there now. You know, in the initial years, I was the front runner. So there weren't a lot of people that they could get to Washington to talk about banking. But now there are a lot of people in that pool, a lot of other CEOs and professionals that can get up there and actually speak to safe banking.
Once you sort of cracked the code or found a safe way of cannabis banking, did people start coming to you kind of looking for you to lead and show them the path so that way they could kind of do the same?
Yeah. Well, you know, there were the ones that openly asked for training and I gave it to them. And then there were the thieves, right?
Those okay.
stole everything and opened their own business and did it their way. But quite, if we look at it this way, I wrote a book in 2016 to let the world know we were banking cannabis and how we were doing it and what steps we went through because the compliance was the most important part of it and bank secrecy was the most important part of it. People wanted to know how we got there. And I know people never believe this, but I'm a high-level introvert and I was getting all those calls. And I asked my PR professional, I said, what am I going to do? I don't have time to work with all these calls coming in. And she's the one said, write down all the questions and let's write a book. And so that's how we did that. So if you're the only one in a risk pool, the regulators focus on you 100%, right?
Yeah.
You never want to be that person, never want to be that financial institution. We endured 16 state and federal exams inside of 7 years. Normally you would have 6 or 7 at most. Mm-hmm. So that's being in the risk pool alone. So by going out and teaching other financial institutions a little on how to do it, I wouldn't be the only one in the risk pool. We wouldn't be the only ones at risk. And go look at them for a change, not just Partner Colorado Credit Union.
Did you send them to go look at the thieves?
Oh, do you know, I kid you not, how things happen. Somebody sent me a fee schedule or something from our program with another financial institution name on it. And I'm like, it's exactly what they do. They copy paste this onto their own letterhead, you know, so they're wow. they're out there. It's really difficult to, you know, they always say, why didn't you patent this? Or you can't just patent processes. You've got to have something unique. I think the people who stole created businesses, but we still had that front runner position and the experience on the team that's necessary to do what we do now, which is not only, you know, service accounts and compliance, but loan to the industry. And that lending is probably very critical in understanding the industry even more than opening an account. So I think, you know, we still have that front runner position. And even some of our employees have gone to some of the other financial institutions. But Safe Harbor has a reliable reputation, having done it 9 straight years. Mm-hmm. And that speaks volumes to a brand.
Well, I think it speaks volumes, particularly in the cannabis industry also, where not just in banking, but there are, you know, operators see a lot of these fly-by-night companies where, you know, if you have a pedigree that's 9 years old, I mean, there's a lot more to that than just some new financial institution that's kind of the new kid on the block.
Yes, yes. And here's the thing. We have seen in the last couple of years, we've seen financial institutions that they think they can just go in, jump in and do it, but they don't put the resources to it necessarily like we did in separating it and creating an entire division that specialized in nothing but cannabis banking. And so they think they can mix it mainstream, but you really can't mix it mainstream inside the financial institution. So they jump in and they jump out. Even, you know, what really happens, it's not a level of being prosecuted. The regulators are responsible to make sure that the financial institutions are fulfilling bank secrecy obligations. And if the regulators aren't happy when they come in on exam, they either increase the number of exams until they understand what you're doing or you better the program, or they can write a report that says to the board, because the board gets this report and says, you know, management doesn't have enough controls in place to monitor the funds coming in. And it turns into a 20-page report. The board starts losing confidence in management, and the management says, I think we'll just jump out of this and get rid of that risk altogether. So we've seen that happen because the resources it demands are significant on a financial institution.
What was the title of the book, and is it still used as a resource today?
That's a good question, which I know you're supposed to ask good questions, but it was called Navigating Safe Harbor. Okay. You know, people were really kind of up in arms when we got the name Safe Harbor, because, you know, but every industry person that came in the door, they knew exactly why we got the name Safe Harbor, because all you ever hear from legal counsel and cannabis is there's no safe harbor. It's federally illegal, right? So we did put the book out there as a training tool, but we did an acquisition of Avica last year at the end of the year. And when the management team came in, the founder, Dan Rhoda, who's still with us and very active in lending, he said, when I went to the other founders, I had two documents in my hand to start this company. One was the FinCEN guidance and the other was your book. And the board heard this, and I said, is that book still on the market? Like, it's a little outdated at this point in time, but, you know, we've heard that more than once, that companies that got started because they read that book and they could see what kind of compliance was necessary. So do I regret putting it out there? I don't think so. I think the industry needed financial services and it was going to come into play one way or another. I just was a front runner in doing it.
Would you say that stepping into cannabis banking, did that reinvigorate you professionally?
It sure got my curiosity up there. It certainly took a lot of my time, and it still takes a lot of my time. I think I was more curious than anything. It's like watching, you know, the internet times, or, you know, the other times when brand new something coming into the market and nobody would touch it. So it really, where nobody else goes, is really opportunity. And I felt like I was in the front row of an entire industry emerging. And I was so curious. I mean, you saw a start in 2014 when recreational became legal. And then you started seeing activity coming in where licenses were being sold for multi-millions of dollars and Canadian firms started coming in. And it was just one challenge after another. And I have that kind of personality where I just like to solve problems. And we did.
After that first transaction, what did the hockey stick look like, you know, in terms of bringing clients on board?
Well, now that's another reason we succeeded with regulatory oversight at the extent that we had oversight, because I promised in the business plan right from the very beginning, I met with our federal insurers, I met with our regulators, and I said, we're not going to do more than 5 accounts per month. That's it. 5 accounts per month, because we're not going to tax our knowledge base. We're not going to grow so fast that you have to worry about the concentration limit. We're going to learn how those funds perform. So we were methodical, and we stuck with that 5 accounts per month until, you know, we started getting ready to go public and spin this off as its own business. But that allowed a lot of comfort for the regulators. And so there wasn't big growth. It was funny, though, because we never advertised. We never did any marketing for the first 7 years. It was all word of mouth. But that in itself was a protective tactic that I put in place. I didn't know the industry. So one of the things I would tell the first 10 clients, which were our test clients, I said, you have to refer somebody in. You're only going to get somebody in here because you're going to recommend them to me, because I don't know who the good players are and who the not so good players are. So it was, they were self-regulating who got into the credit union at that point in time while I was learning the industry. And that's how we built it, very methodically and safely.
That's a really interesting vetting process, relying on word of mouth and sort of the credibility of your existing clients. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it worked for us. Did it work 100%? No, it did not work 100%. But for the most part, we got some very solid clients in year one. And then we started, you know, once we learned the industry, which probably took us about 4-5 months, we would put them through some rigorous onboarding. And it, even in the initial stages when I was meeting with them, I said, I need to build this interview form out further. I need to find out how to legitimize the industry. What am I not asking that I should be asking that will help me succeed in keeping your funds safe? Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, so I did rely on those in early clients to help sort out. And that's how we grew. And our clients started going national and getting licenses once they got banked and they didn't have to spend all that time on banking. They started getting licenses in other states. And then the next challenge comes up. Do I bank Nevada? Do I bank right. Maryland? And so I went to, again, the Federal Reserve and I said, here's how I'm going to move the money. The fact is I can't fulfill BSA obligations and bank them only in Colorado and leave them in cash in Nevada. That's not going to work because that opens up to, you know, unmonitored activities. Mm. And so again, everything I did above board to make sure I didn't scare the financial system or regulators.
What was some of that rigorous onboarding? What did that include?
You know that it still takes about 2 weeks to get an account and get through onboarding. We have to know the cannabis businesses far more than we have to know any other business that we would have banked in the normal financial institution. So we have to know, you know, how they set up their business. I think the biggest thing is knowing the money flowing in, knowing the compliance they have in place. We have to do things like gather their actual applications for licenses. And then we start looking for consistency between what they answered in the interview, what they have in their application, and what they're reporting to the government. So everything's a checks and balance. I think the most difficult thing that we have found in the years is the beneficial ownership. So when you open accounts, you have to disclose what the ownership is. And a lot of times, especially in the early stages, and even now, a lot of people don't want to disclose that they're even a small owner in a cannabis company for their own professional reasons. I get it. But that seems to be where we have a lot of tie up in terms of, look, we're not going to go out and tell everybody. It's just, you know, we have privacy rules that we don't get to talk about you, but we do need to prove to our regulators that we're doing our homework on you.
When you were only allowing 5 clients a month in, did you ever have to say no to anybody that you knew maybe wasn't going to make it to the next month?
No.
Okay.
No. And it's interesting because I had to prioritize sometimes. Mm-hmm. And see, I just made it up as I went along. So I said, how do I move somebody up in line? Well, I had somebody come to me and they had 500 employees. And he says to me, I have payroll in 12 days and I can't make payroll in cash. I can't do it in cash, but I just got kicked out of our other bank. Can you do this for me? And I personally, I still onboarding everybody at that point in time, but I personally took them home at night and I onboarded every single night. And I remember him going back to one of my other staff members and said, is she going to really be able to get this done? And she said, if Sandy said she was going to get it done, she's going to get it done. We had that account open and they ran that payroll through. So, you know, so many people would have been impacted if I didn't put them ahead of the next person, right? Yeah. 500 employees is hard. Can you imagine doing a cash payroll for 500 employees?
I know that when I was doing construction in college, my boss had to do payroll in cash for 3 and he struggled.
It's difficult. Not to mention it puts all those employees at risk carrying cash home.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was one of the things that I wanted to circle back to is, you know, how did your employees respond when all of a sudden there's $1 million in cash in boxes and you kind of got to figure out, all right, what do we do now?
Well, I had great employees that worked on this with me. But, you know, they're like counting this money and they're looking at me sideways like, is this what we're going to do for the next, you know, 10 years is count money? And I'm like, yeah. No, I literally would come across a problem every single day. And I would say, I don't know how I'm going to solve this. And I'd have to think about it. And I would go home and it would be like 8 o'clock and I would have my glass of wine and I'd be thinking about how to solve this. I honestly would get up at 3 o'clock every morning and the answer would be in my head.
Oh, wow.
Nothing like good wine, huh?
Yeah.
But it was, you know, you have to let it sit in there. You know, there was just so many risks coming at me that I just had to let it sit there And again, trial and error. Sometimes we would try things and we'd work it out three times over and then finally get the right thing. But, you know, it would be problem, solve the problem, test the solution, and then move forward. So that's how we really did it.
So you essentially single-handedly built the cannabis banking regulations brick by brick. Did you have any help?
I had two people, and one is, two people that were, we decided we're going to have a three-person shop. In order to develop the program, I had to act as the banker first. First, I had to design the business, act as the banker, and face all the problems. So we had one banker, because I really couldn't get on the system and key in deposits. I needed somebody who actually knew how to open accounts and key. So And that was Amanda, and she is still with me and is a senior vice president now in this public company. And then I had Kim Carter, or Kim Oliver at the time, which everybody knows her name as well. And she was a VP at the credit union, and she devoted her full time in terms of helping me logistically and putting this together. So it was the three of us. But we also had, you know, everybody else in the organization. Once they got comfortable, once they, you know, got through a couple exams, it took the entire management team of Partner Colorado Credit Union to make sure that we were mitigating risk all the way through the system. So if you start offering ACH payments, you've got to actually phase into those policies and procedures how to do additional monitoring as it pertains to cannabis funds. So I have to give credit for the entire to the entire management team, who, once they got comfortable, once they saw the regulators were going to let us stay in this business, were right there with us. But for the first 6 months, 8 months, I remember the HR VP coming up to me, and I think we got to chatting, and she's like, "Oh, you guys are running around like chickens with your heads cut off, and everybody knows when you're moving to get out of the way," you know, because it was that fast paced.
How, if at all, did the success of Safe Harbor Financial impact Partner Colorado Credit Union?
Well, so here's the thing. The success that we realized started dominating. And this is one of the things, you know, while I was on contract with the board, my contract ended again 5 years after they gave it to me. And my attention was really torn between cannabis banking and the subsidiary that we had there and Partner Colorado Credit Union. And it was dominating my strategic thinking. And so just before that contract came up, I said to the board, I said, "We've got to do something. Number one, it's gotten too big for the organization. It's very specialized. It's time to start considering how to break this out. And by the way, your best use of me is to replace me as CEO and let me move over to a subsidiary that holds all of the Safe Harbor program and try to optimize it there." So it did get to the point where it was a distraction from normal credit union activities. And breaking it out was probably the best thing we did for Partner Colorado.
How did that separation go smoothly?
Actually, they were so anxious to get rid of me. It did. No. No, it was that dominating in terms of taking up people's time. So I think that everybody saw it as the best solution for the credit union. And, you know, we took a lot of the employees and we gave them retention bonuses to move over to the new subsidiary. We tried to keep all the benefits very similar. And then we started breaking things out, whether it was, you know, finance. We did it methodically. Again, you hear that word come out of my mouth a lot, don't you? Very methodical in everything we do. So first we would deal with HR, and instead of using their HR, we would go out and get our own PEO. Then we would deal with the, you know, bill pay and financials, and then we got a CFO, you know, so we kept breaking things out. And the last move we made was just in January this last year. We were in the Partner Colorado facilities, and then our last move was to get our own location and our own branch. And I can tell you that when the staff and I got in there, it was like, it really helped us feel independent finally, right? And as our own entity. So everybody was pretty excited about that.
How is life different now that you have that independence?
For me, it isn't, it's business as usual from what we did in the credit union, except at a larger scale. And the part that I have found most challenging was moving from a private entity to a public company. That has been the learning curve since last September that has probably taken a lot of my energy and time, you know, learning investor relations, learning, you know, all the public filings that have to go on. You know, one of the hardest things for me to learn coming from a private realm in credit unions is credit unions like to share, right? You know, we share to help everybody, other credit unions. Credit unions are very small by nature. So we share to help other credit unions do things and, you know, constantly kind of sharing what we're doing strategically, whatever. And as soon as we turn public, it's like, you can't say anything that hasn't been filed.
Yeah.
So I was constantly pulling up the filings to see if it was in the filings and if I can say anything. So I think it was the hardest part is not being able to freely share what we're doing internally.
Okay.
It's almost counterproductive. I know you have to share to the whole public at one time, but investors really do want to hear more in between those quarterly reports. And I feel bad when I can't just answer questions.
Why the decision to go public?
I don't think it was absolutely a decision to go public. I think we just made the decision to spin off Safe Harbor from Partner Colorado Credit Union. And we looked at venture capital. We looked at a couple options and the SPAC option came up. And, you know, it was interesting. The folks that were running the SPAC, Northern Lights at that time, actually knew us because they were in the cannabis business and had bank accounts with us. Okay. So, and they also knew the challenge and they knew that we had launched into lending. So they saw the opportunity and they had created that SPAC specifically to deal with financial services to cannabis. So we became their target and they knew our business well enough to know how to talk to us.
Okay. Safe Harbor Financial has done more than $20 billion in funding. How do you pick a winner?
Okay, so the funding that we're talking about on the nearly $20 billion, right, for those press releases, is that that's the amount of money we've put into the financial system. That's not money we have funded for loans. So when you move money into the financial system, especially that kind of volume, you know, the federal agencies and the FinCEN and the DOJ, they want to know that it's all legal money. So that's why that statistic is important, because the Federal Reserve has allowed us to utilize the federal system with federally illegal money, right? Mm-hmm. So it's important that that's really verifiable confirmation that what we're doing is protecting the financial system. As far as loans, though, in terms of funding and credit, we're probably up over $35 million at this point in time. And the important thing to remember here is that we are underwriting this credit like a financial institution, because we are utilizing financial institution balance sheets, which means you're not getting rates that are outrageous. You're not getting terms that are hard money, but you're also getting credit like a normal operation would get credit based upon the collateral. There's not like projection loans. You're promising that. We don't make loans like we're investors. We make loans like we're bankers.
Okay.
And the rates reflect that. So, you know, our rates, you know, or you know, between 9 and 14% in comparison to what you could get in harder money, which is, you know, up there 18 to 36%. So we're trying to normalize credit, but it's a different game for the cannabis industry altogether.
I read that you've done business in something like more than 40 states and territories. Are there any that are still off limits in the US?
Yes, I think there are actually about 4 states that where it's just completely illegal, kind of like Kansas and can't remember all of them. Idaho, maybe. Yeah. So very few. When I talk about off limits, so there are only 4 states that doesn't have some form of legality. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the states start with a CBD program because it benefits a lot of medical issues, and they see the benefit and people accessing that. And, you know, they see the actual proof of medicinal value in CBD. And then they move to medical cannabis. And then they see, let's be honest, they see how the tax money comes in.
Right. Right.
And then suddenly, you know, they moved to adult use or recreational, and there was, especially after COVID. So it's very recessionary, resilient. And we saw that our clients thrived during the COVID shutdown because they were like an alcohol store or a liquor store. They were essential. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's when you saw mass legalization starting to happen across the country. And we have been taking cash in 40 different states, but there's, you know, we can quickly move to other states and move that money. So the platform is already in place. We have the accounts in place. We have the systems in place, and we can easily expand into newly legalizing markets.
How has sort of that post-COVID slump impacted Safe Harbor at all? Just because you recently announced your Q2 results and you posted increases in revenue, total deposits, accounts, like nearly everything. You know, how is it that Safe Harbor is, you know, sort of prospering while it's maybe somewhat down for others?
Well, remember when we talked about the 5 accounts per month?
Yeah.
And what we did was max out the balance sheet of Partner Colorado Credit Union, which stunted our growth. Now that we are outside of Partner Colorado Credit Union, and because of the Evica acquisition that we did last year, we have additional bank partners that allow us to use bigger balance sheets, like up to $1 billion, which allows us to grow at whatever pace we want to. The other thing is when you have more than one financial institution and you don't want to upset the apple cart or move too fast for any one financial institution, you know, you can park 5 accounts at this financial institution, 5 at this financial institution, which then doubles your capacity of production.
Okay. How did the Abaca acquisition come about?
Well, I think that this is going to be a natural situation in those providing financial services to the cannabis industry. And I think that's because, you know, we all went off and specialized in what we did best. I did banking best. Evica came in and they did fintech platform best. And, you know, you have other people came in and do courier services and payment processing. But we all were singularly focused. And so I think what you're going to see now is consolidation of those financial services so that we have a well-rounded product offering to secure all the financial services and be a one-stop shop. So I had, it's a very small market. We know each other, you know, and we've known each other for years and we watch each other. And there might be some competitive nature there, but because there was such a small segment of financial service providers, it was also a friendly environment. And, you know, we respect for what each other had done. And, you know, you just start having those conversations about, are you planning on doing this and this and expanding that way? And they would say, yes. And I said, so are we, but we're not sure we want to do it alone. You know, it's kind of how those conversations go out there. And then one thing leads to another.
In terms of leading to another, possibly the potential for further growth via acquisition then?
M&A strategy is definitely part of our growth strategy going forward. Yes, we're looking for, you know, we're looking at the pioneers, those very type of people that I just described that have been specialized and that found a path, because not everybody was successful. And so we want to have successful partners who are experts in the industry themselves. So it's really hard to learn cannabis, not difficult to learn specialties, right? Mm-hmm.
Is it any different working with a tier one MSO versus a mom and pop shop?
It didn't used to be, but I would say it is. I'd say the industry has evolved, right? You're really getting higher level professionals coming in on some of those large MSOs. It is not different in terms of banking services. I think it's especially because what we like to do is if we have an MSO, we want to give them one banker. We want to have them consolidated so they don't have to have 13 accounts across the country. They can just talk to Safe Harbor. We can help them with all of their needs. And they got one banker, get to know them. We get to know the company. And then we try to simplify it. So to us, it means like the banker probably has, you know, 13 different accounts for 13 different states, which is fine because you have to separate all your state business because of regulations, and just means they specialize in maybe have four MSO type clients, and where another banker might have 50 or 45 dispensaries or cultivations or whatever.
When it comes to banking services and demands for new products, are they still all laid out on your roadmap, or are you getting ideas from some of your clients as to what some of your next offerings might be?
Well, we just implemented interest-bearing checking accounts or interest-bearing money market accounts. So it's not always easy to implement those new services. We're working on, I think we put this out in the call report the other day, lines of credits that our clients have access to. So we are trying to roll them out, but roll them out in a methodical way. And again, the reason we can't just rush out and do this is because we're working with financial institutions, and financial institutions aren't known for growing fast, you know, or moving fast. Methodical. There you go. There we go again, coming out of the banking world. So yes, we listen to the clients. We know what they want. We are definitely designing the products that are in line to get them what they need, so that we want to retain our clients and we want to grow them.
You recently won the Green Market Report's Cannabis Finance Award for Top CEO. What does it mean to you to be recognized?
Well, you know, it was interesting. The day I found out, and Deborah there at Green Market Report sent me the message personally, and you know, you go so many years working really hard on something, and you don't necessarily get recognized. But I have to say that when I got it, I was touched. I was, okay, somebody does recognize that I have contributed to the cannabis industry and the growth and, you know, the legitimacy and all that kind of stuff. So it was nice.
In your opinion, and this is kind of just a play on words with your name, but like, is there truly any safe harbor when it comes to cannabis banking?
Not at the moment. No.
Okay.
So, but again, nobody's been prosecuted, because I told you how the regulators get in the middle of that so that, you know, FinCEN and the DOJ don't have to come in and do something. There is not really. It's everything in cannabis. And I learned this very early when I was talking to the clients is, if you're going to get into this, you have to understand everything in cannabis is an uphill battle. Mm-hmm. So you just got to have that stamina to stay with it. And, you know, the Safe Harbor obviously was a great name to choose, and I get a kick out of it still today.
Yeah.
Won't be giving that one up.
You know, as you're getting ready to call it an evening with that glass of wine, is there anything that's still keeping you up at night?
Oh, yeah. Like every 3 o'clock in the morning, I never got out of that habit. Oh, yes. I think absolutely. You know, you're only as good as what you did last quarter in a public company. So I'm already thinking next quarter and the next quarter. And, you know, how do I get a return to investors? I think that's probably one of the biggest things on my mind, and making sure that I understand I have to move, and I have to move maybe faster than I had to do in the private sector. And more methodical. So I think that probably keeps me up the most.
So what was it? 7 years ago, you were about 5 months away from retirement. Is it anywhere in your future going forward, or what's the game plan?
So 9 years ago.
9 years ago.
Oh my goodness. Yes, 9 years ago, exactly in July when I started that project. And yes, but you know, having moved to a public domain at this point in time and out of the private sector, there's a lot of corporate knowledge in my head. I mean, if you want to know where a document is, you want to know what kind of agreements are, you want to know where, you know, I know where to go find that stuff in the computer. I have that corporate knowledge. My job is to make sure the continuity of business is there, and that the corporate knowledge I got a lot of new officers on board since we went public. My job right now is to make sure that I am moving that corporate knowledge through the system, because I'm not the only one who has to lead the organization anymore. So I don't see it in the near future.
Okay.
Unless they're all fast learners.
Well, you know, I'm always amazed with, and it happened to me too, about how once you get involved with the cannabis industry in almost any aspect, it kind of gets your hook, it hooks into you. Did you ever imagine, like, if you could go back 9 years ago, would you believe that you were going to spend the next decade in the industry?
No. In fact, I was at a credit union event 1 year into the program. So it would have been 2016. And I was sitting at a table with a bunch of other CEOs. We were up there lobbying for credit unions. And he starts talking to me about, hey, you know, why don't you merge with us? Why don't you merge your credit union with my credit union? And I'm like, he's like, aren't you getting ready to retire? And I said, no, the board just gave me another 5-year contract because they want me to see this project through. And he looks right at me. He's like, what project takes 5 years? And I'm like, yeah, I know. Maybe I'm hoping to get it done in 5 years. And then here I am 9 years later. So yeah, I know. I never thought, and I never foresaw spinning it off. And I never foresaw, you know, getting on stage and speaking as much as I had to. And I never foresaw writing a book. And, you know, we were just doing the right thing and taking advantage of opportunity as it showed up.
Well, it's an incredible story, and it's been a truly inspirational journey. Before we get out of here, is there anything else that you want to make sure the Cannabis Equipment News audience either knows about yourself or Safe Harbor Financial?
No, I think that, you know, I like to tell people that our journey was really based upon the cannabis industry journey. And all we kept doing was listening to the needs of our clients. And that was the brilliant decision, is listening to the client needs and solving their problems. And so I think that we're still in that mode. I don't think that everything is mainstream yet. I don't think safe banking is going to make it mainstream because of the complexities of the industry and the existing black market. But Safe Harbor has been a reliable partner, and we're going to continue to do the same thing.
Do you have any expectations for federal legalization?
Not for a while, because I think that you start getting all those federal agencies in there to talk about taking it off the scheduling. You got too many people who have jobs based upon the fact that they've got to catch the criminals in the market. But if they can't get, you know, everything they need from financial institutions, they can't necessarily do their job right. And by keeping it scheduled keeps probably people in the DOJ sector, you know, having more information to do their job.
Understood. Well, Sundy, thank you very much for taking the time today. I really do appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. Enjoyed it.
All right. Well, before we get out of here, please make sure to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast. You could also help us out a lot by leaving the podcast a positive review on whatever platform you use. If you want to email the podcast, you can reach me at david@cannabisequipmentnews.com with email the podcast in the subject line. You could also subscribe to our daily newsletter and make sure you get it delivered to our inbox first. For Sundy Seafried, CEO of Safe Harbor Financial, I'm David Manti. This is the Cannabis Equipment News Podcast, and we'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to the Cannabis Equipment News Podcast.